Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
We might not even have a fishing resource left in our rivers.
Alaska Native tribes sue the federal government over failed salmon runs. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 12th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the state ferry system's new leader shares his priorities for the fleet.
Working on making sure we have the foundational processes and procedures in place to be focused on reliability.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's 3 universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Anchorage Independent Representative Elise Galvin on Monday introduced a new bill to reimpose a state income tax, part of a broader proposal to address persistent state deficits. House Bill 156 would tax Alaskans 2% of any annual income above $200,000. If someone makes less than that amount, they'd pay $20. Any income tax could be automatically deducted from that year's permanent fund dividend. Galvin said she's still waiting on the results of a full fiscal analysis, but she expects the proposal to generate between $125 million and $150 million per year for the state treasury. Alaska has not had an income tax since 1980. A proposal to reinstate the income tax passed the Alaska House in 2017, but the state Senate rejected it. A bill passed in the state Senate this week would allow cities or boroughs to offer tax incentives for economic development properties and tax disincentives for owners of rundown properties. The bill has 2 sections. The first part allows boroughs to give tax breaks to developers to create economic opportunities. It would remove a limitation on the size of a tax break a borough could provide for economic development properties. The second part would allow municipalities to introduce a property tax on blighted or rundown properties. The bill limits the cost to no more than 50% of the property's tax. It would be the responsibility of the cities or boroughs to clearly define what blighted means before levying any tax. Municipalities could also offer a reduced tax rate for properties while they're being fixed up. The bill's sponsor, Anchorage Democrat Forrest Dunbar, says it's designed to spur economic growth in the state by encouraging developers and giving municipalities more options. The bill passed in the Senate with multiple amendments from Palmer Republican Senator Shelley Hughes. It will now need to pass the House and get a signature from the governor to become law. Two regional tribal organizations have sued the federal government over failed Western Alaska salmon runs. The Association of Village Council Presidents and the Tanana Chiefs Conference have named 2 federal agencies as defendants in the case, the National Marine Fisheries Service and the Department of Commerce. The lawsuit was filed on their behalf by Earth Justice. AVCP and the Tanana Chiefs represent about 100 tribes who live along the Yukon and Kuskokwim Rivers, a landmass that stretches from southwest Alaska to the Canadian border. Jennifer Hooper, the Natural Resources Director for AVCP, says back-to-back seasons of fishery collapses have affected every aspect of life for people in the region.
It's just been a compounding situation of huge food security concerns and lack of salmon, which of course is protein and food, but more so it's the culture and the traditions that people have experienced for thousands and thousands of years.
Salmon bycatch is at the heart of the complaint, which was filed in U.S. District Court last Friday. Bycatch are fish that are thrown away as fishing boats pursue other species. In this case, the lawsuit targets factory trawlers in the Bering Sea that fish for pollock, a ground fish used in popular flaked fish products like fish sticks and surimi, a crab substitute. Brian Ridley, who is chairman of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, says the salmon crisis may soon reach a point of no return.
If immediate large-scale action doesn't take place by either the state or the feds, we might not even have a fishing resource left in our rivers. I mean, we're darn near the level where I think endangered species could start coming into play. And that's all we're trying to do, is not get to that point.
The lawsuit claims federal fishery managers relied on outdated studies when it set groundfish catch limits for the 2023 and 2024 seasons and failed to consider what it calls monumental changes in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands ecosystems that have taken place over the last two decades. The fishing industry has argued there's no conclusive evidence that bycatch has caused the decline of salmon. NOAA Fisheries, which oversees the National Marine Fisheries Management Service, says it cannot comment on litigation. Earth Justice is the same environmental law firm which recently filed suit on behalf of three other Southwest Alaska tribes to block the Donlin gold mine to protect fisheries in that region. Well, Craig Tornga became the new head of the Alaska Marine Highway System this month. He comes to the job with 46 years in the marine industry. He worked at Crowley Marine Services for a few decades transporting fuel and supplies in Alaska. For the last 6 years, Tornga served as a senior vice president with Kirby Offshore Marine in Houston, Texas. It's a large company with 6,000 employees. It distributes petroleum products with 1,400 barges. Now, Tornga is in charge of a fleet of 9 ships and hundreds of ferry workers. He spoke with Coast Alaska's Angela Denning about his new role, and he says his number one priority is seeking reliability.
We don't have a service to sell if we're not reliable. And the last thing we want to be doing is selling something and disappointing people. So we will focus on reliability. It's not a quick fix. Working on making sure we have the foundational processes and procedures in place to be focused on reliability and having our preventative maintenance run through a CMMS, a computer maintenance management system. So we're pretty scripted on how we do our maintenance. So I'll be real focused on that to start with.
There's ships that are 50 and 60 years old, and they get tied up for mechanical problems and maintenance. So can you kind of tell me a little bit more about what you're talking about?
Every component on the vessel, from the main engines all the way to the steering pump, has an OEM required maintenance schedule. We just need to make sure that we're digging that far. And so we'll make sure that our system has a hierarchy built up in it that gets down to every component. And that's what I'll be looking at. Now, age, as you mentioned, in the fleet, that gives another challenge. And so there are some things that related to age that do make it hard. And so, you know, we will be working on the long-term portion of it. We will be working on fleet plans, replacements, and at least have a retirement date set for different vessels based on their conditions as well. So every vessel gets to the point that, is it worth even pouring any more money into it? Just like everybody's vehicle, it's really that same analysis.
I'm interested in knowing why you went after this job. There's a lot of challenges. We talked about the aging fleet, but there's also a severe, you know, shortage of crew and some staffing shortages.
You know, you're not the first one to ask me that question. So it's like I mentioned, I had done my 6 years. I was ready to get out of Houston. I've always liked the ferries. You know, they're a unique ferry with a good big ship's bow, they're ocean going. I like that. And as far as challenges, you know, when you're in business, sometimes challenges are fun. You know, let me come tackle that. And that's just what I was doing at Kirby, to be a part of the solution there. And here we're going to dig in, see what we can do. And as you point out, there's a lot of challenges. The hiring or trying to find qualified, licensed individuals is not unique to the ferries right now. It is an industry problem across the U.S. We were the same way at Kirby, and we had to be proactive to strategically try to beat out our competitors out of every licensed guy coming out of or gal coming out of a maritime academy. And as they graduate them each year, we're there. We're there. We're taking them out to lunch. We're taking them to dinner. We're just trying to sell them on coming to work for us. And we need to do the same thing here.
How would you describe your leadership style? Because in your past job and now here, you're working with hundreds of people.
You know, it's Kirby's large. Like I said, you know, there's 6,000 employees there as far as on the vessels. So it's had a lot of vessels. But I'm still very much a people's person. I'm involved. I like to be on the boats. And I really like to have the office knowing that we're here to support the vessels. And I like to see us on the boats. I have a program called Boots on Steel. Others use it, but I just need to make sure everybody's out there engaged, knowing what the needs are. And that we're here to support the vessel so they can deliver the customer service we need.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a chef in Kodiak prepares traditional meals with a modern take.
Living in a village, being on a boat, you have limited ingredients, you have limited access to things, and so you learn to be a little bit more creative.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
The Federal Environmental Protection Agency has fined the owner of the Pogo Gold Mine $600,000 for improperly storing, treating, and disposing of nearly 365,000 tons of hazardous materials into the mine near Delta Junction. The EPA said in a news release issued Tuesday that it fined Australia-based Northern Star Resources for 81 violations of the Federal Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, known as RCRA. The violations mainly involved hazardous waste discovered in and around an assay laboratory at the mine.
There's a concern that they don't have a good handle on the types of hazard that they were generating in that laboratory.
Brett Dugan is an EPA attorney based at the agency's Region 10 office in Seattle. He says the violations were discovered during a June 2019 inspection at the mine and two underground tanks beneath the lab.
They were accumulating acidic waste in one tank underneath the laboratory and then cyanide-bearing waste in another, and then treating those on site.
Dugan says the tanks did not comply with regulations and neither did the way Northern Star was getting rid of the hazardous materials.
They were disposing of this waste by mixing it with all the other waste that are generated as part of the mine. They were disposing it on site.
Dugan says workers at Pogo mixed the waste with a concrete slurry and injected it into the mine. He says the process was illegal and posed potential environmental concerns. A Fairbanks-based Northern Star spokesperson said in a written response Tuesday that the company's disposal of hazardous waste at the mine, quote, did not result in any negative impact on or damage to the environment, end quote. She added that the company has already taken steps to enhance training in Resource Conservation and Recovery Act compliance. Dugan says Northern Star has agreed to stop using the tanks and seal them. He says it also agreed to stop disposing of the waste in the mine and instead to store it in containers and ship it to a permitted disposal facility as the law requires. With fresh snow and cold temperatures back, a shelter consultant on Tuesday begrudgingly made this recommendation to the Anchorage Assembly.
Based on what I'm seeing right now, I am recommending that the Sullivan Arena remain open for one more month.
The Assembly hired the consultant, Kathleen McLaughlin, last month to conduct third-party oversight of the municipality's emergency cold weather shelters, the biggest of which is the Sullivan Arena. The shelters are set to close April 30th. McLaughlin said she had participated in a town hall at the Sullivan earlier and asked the clients there,
"Are you ready to go? What are you going to do on May 1st? Many are in the queue for a voucher or a housing opportunity, but they're on wait lists."
McLaughlin said as of Monday night, 350 people were sleeping in cots in the Sullivan and 110 people used the warming area. The Assembly did not act on her recommendation to keep the Sullivan shelter open longer, and is moving forward with a fresh push to stand up a permanent low-barrier shelter before next winter. Assemblymember Felix Rivera acknowledged there will be more people sleeping outside after the April shelter closures. The Togiak Sac Roe herring fishery used to draw hundreds of fishermen, and it's Alaska's largest herring fishery. But as the market for roe has shrunk, the remote fishery has become financially unfeasible, and no commercial fishing will take place this spring. Now, as KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, the state's marketing branch is looking to the North Atlantic for ideas about how to help Alaska's industry.
Commercial herring fishing in Togiak used to be gangbusters.
It was like a gold rush.
Frank Woods lives in Dillingham and started fishing for Togiak herring in the mid-1980s.
The whole bay would fill up with industry. It would be a buzz. Everybody would gear up to go, and everybody had not only fun doing it but made money at it.
Fast forward to 2018, and Woods was the only gillnetter in the fishery.
Going from that huge industry to down to one boat, I never imagined that even possible, let alone, like now, no fishing at all, to where there's no market for it and nobody's targeting and changing that for us.
Processing companies in Alaska primarily sell herring to Japan, which used to have a big market for the roe. But as Japanese traditions shifted, that market shrank and the price for herring dropped. For years, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute has worked to increase demand for herring in the U.S. The state bought a herring filleter for processors to use, and it's tried to promote the culinary delights of the fish, hosting Alaska Herring Week 3 years in a row, and working with chefs to develop recipes. But the demand for Alaska herring hasn't budged significantly. And this year, processors opted out of Togiak.
You can only lose money for the fun of it for so long.
Bruce Schachtler was a longtime herring fisherman and now directs ASME's food aid program.
We've continued over time to lose more and more buyers out of Togiak and herring buyers in general across the state. So, what that really tells you is there ain't very much money in it.
That's why last year, Schachtler and others at ASME published a report, the Alaska Herring Market Recovery Project. It said the goal was to bring new perspectives to an industry stuck in the 1980s. Examining European fisheries in the North Atlantic, Schachtler found that fleets fish for herring throughout the year, so processors get a lot of different products based on when the fish are caught. Herring from the North Atlantic are used to make fish meal and oil, but also for canning, pickling, and smoking.
They catch the fish in Norway, they ship it to Germany or Denmark, they smoke it, they can it, and next thing you know, you're buying it in Trader Joe's in Seattle. My question has always been, well, can we catch these big herring in Alaska? Can we catch them in the wintertime in some of these other places when they have a different meat quality from the spawning phase? And then can we do something with them?
Schachtler says in order to market herring successfully, the American fishing industry needs to figure out something new to sell. But he says so far they haven't seen strong interest in doing so. And there are some key differences between herring fisheries in Alaska and in the Atlantic. For one, the European fisheries are much closer to a big slice of their market, while Alaska processors have to ship fish much further away. And he says herring fisheries in the North Atlantic are much bigger.
Some of the boats they're fishing will bring in 10 million pounds aboard. They'll have a big week up there fishing and they'll catch 35,000 tons in just a week.
The report also highlights opportunities in the industry. Some European herring stocks lost their sustainability certification from the Marine Stewardship Council in 2020. And the report says that creates openings for other fisheries to win new customers. Schachtler says in order for things to change, management has to shift. Right now, Alaska's herring fisheries are largely managed to harvest sac roe. But to get fish with higher oil content, for example, they have to harvest them in the fall.
If you don't change, Fish and Game doesn't change management, then you don't have access to those fish for those particular products that you're going to try to address in some section of the market. Management has to change if anything else is going to change with any significant manner.
For this spring, Togiak's herring run will return to spawn, unharvested by a commercial fleet. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com. Sexual violence affects nearly every household in America. If someone you love has experienced sexual assault or abuse, it can be a lot to handle. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline today to learn how to support someone you care about. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Commercial fishing in Alaska, long notorious as a dangerous and potentially deadly occupation, is getting safer, according to data presented this week to federal regulators. The Alaska Beacon reports that Alaska fishing-related fatalities declined at a rate of 57% from 2013 to 2022, according to the presentation made to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which is meeting in Anchorage. Alaska accounted for slightly over a third of the nation's fishing-related deaths during that period, according to the presentation. The decline in Alaska fatalities mirrors a national trend. Although there are year-to-year fluctuations, nationally the rate of fishing fatalities has declined by about 42% since 2009. Of the Alaska fishing fatalities recorded from 2013 to 2022, about a third resulted from vessel disasters, 28% from onboard accidents, 23% from falls overboard, 12% from onshore activity, and 5% during dive fisheries. Okay, picture in your mind's eye St. Lawrence Island, a tiny piece of land off the Bering Sea coast, not far from Russia, surrounded by sea ice. Now picture two villages, Gamble at the top of the island, and Savunga on the southeast corner, in what's known as polar bear country. Then think about Starlight and Nanook, two dogs who decided to take off on an adventure, beloved pets belonging to Mandy Iwarrigan, who lives in Gamble.
If dogs could talk, both of them would have one heck of a story.
Iwarrigan lost track of the two dogs on a visit to Savunga. She thought Starlight and Nanook were at home in Gamble, but the dogs had other plans. They apparently went on a walkabout with her uncle's dog, Ghost. When the dog disappeared, she says her uncle wasn't worried because Ghost has a habit of taking off on his own and being gone for days. But here's the strange thing. Starlight, who looks like a black lab and husky mix, showed up in Savunga about 2.5 weeks later. It's about 40 miles between Savunga and Gamble. So where was Nanook? Well, the Australian Shepherd turned up in Wales a week after Starlight made it to Savunga. Wales is a tiny community to the east of St. Lawrence Island, northwest of Nome, a trek that took Nanook across about 165 miles of sea ice. And except for some bite marks on his leg, he was in good condition. Iwarrigan believes he survived by hunting.
He's not picky on what he eats, especially if it comes to our native food. So I'm pretty sure he ate scraps of seals, scraps of birds.
Iwarrigan says the dog proved he was a survivor and lived up to his Siberian Yupik name, Nanook, which means polar bear. Nanook traveled by airplane back to Gamble. Iwarrigan says she was especially grateful to two people in Wales, a brother and sister, who took care of Nanook, and to those who helped him fly home. She says she and her children were there to greet him.
When he came and heard our voices off of the plane, he started whining and crying, you know, just the happiness.
Iwarrigan says she's treating Nanook's wounds with antibiotics and he appears to be on the mend, gradually getting his energy back. She believes he may have been bitten by a wolverine or a seal or possibly even a polar bear. Well, dining options can be few and far between in small communities, particularly when they're off the road system and supplies are difficult to source. But an eatery that opened in downtown Kodiak this winter is dishing up meals with a special connection to the island. KMXD's Kirsten Dobroth stopped in and has this story.
It's a snowy Wednesday morning, and the kitchen at Nuniak hasn't opened for the day yet, but it's already buzzing. There's dozens of boxes lined up on the counter waiting to be filled with to-go orders. Country music is pumping out of the speakers, and the restaurant's owner, Melissa Burns Svoboda, is icing a golden brown tray of cinnamon rolls that she just pulled from the oven.
We're fortunate that we made cinnamon rolls for a morning job, and that's extra. So we, the crew needs to eat too. So it's the perk of the job.
Burns Svoboda has run a catering business out of itinerant kitchen spaces in Kodiak over the years. She upgraded to a brick and mortar late last year, where she now dishes up takeaway brunch and lunch orders. She's planning on a bigger grand opening in late May, when she'll open a sit-down dining space inside the restaurant. Nuniak means Old Harbor in Aleutic. That's the village where Burns Svoboda grew up, on the southeast side of the island. She proudly advertises her business as being woman and native-owned, saying she wants to empower other Native women to pursue their dreams. Cooking has been a lifelong passion.
I mean, that's just part of growing up in a big family. My mom was always in the kitchen cooking, and being a young girl and the eldest of four, that was kind of my role, was right there alongside my mom.
That role later evolved to include prepping meals on the boat when she started fishing commercially with her dad a few years later. As the head of a busy commercial kitchen now, Burns Svoboda still works alongside members of her family. Her cousin Chance Christensen was behind the counter and stirring a big pot of chowder that morning.
I think it was just a village thing. Everybody's always cooking together. Everybody would all go over and everybody would help with all the families coming together.
Traditional recipes from Old Harbor, like soups, chowders, and parak pockets, which are kind of like flaky salmon-filled pies, are on Nuniak's menu now. Recipes for staples like bread come from passed-down family traditions. Burns Svoboda sources ingredients from local food producers when she can, including produce from growers in Old Harbor and seasonal seafood from Kodiak fishermen and processors. She says it's all made her a savvy business owner.
Living in a village, being on a boat, you have limited ingredients, you have limited access to things, and so you learn to be a little bit more creative.
She says she likes to jazz up familiar recipes to showcase both her creativity as a chef and local flavors. Menu items like the sukpiak tacos have been one of her best sellers.
We just took a spin on the Indian taco, and we use our traditional breads and make a taco out of it. And I think it's fun.
The clock is creeping towards opening, and the phone has been ringing off the hook. Burns Svoboda seems to be everywhere at once, bouncing from the meat slicer to a second tray of cinnamon rolls that need icing. Somewhere in the middle, she assembles a food processor. She dumps a bag of flour into a bowl and throws in a stick of butter. There isn't a measuring cup in sight, but she says that's no problem. All her food is measured in love, just like how she learned in Old Harbor. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Riley Board in Juneau, Rhonda McBride and Jeremy Shea in Anchorage, Angela Denny in Petersburg, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, and Kirsten Dobrath in Kodiak. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky is our producer. Thanks again to Wesley Early for filling in. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska Pacific University offers degree-seeking students the opportunity to receive donor-funded scholarships, grants, and other financial aid. Apply for admission to be automatically considered for most scholarships. Complete financial aid applications by priority deadlines to receive optimal consideration. Financial aid counselors are available to assist. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.